Morning, everyone. Good Chodesh. Today's daf in Gittin is Chav Tes. We begin the daf today on the bottom of Chaches Amid Beis. We thank the Lupin Foundation for sponsorship of the daf as well as the Echonish Maslibe Gabriela Bashmua. To recap, we saw a Mishnah yesterday in Chav Ches Amid Beis where the Mishnah says that under normal circumstances we assume a person's alive. In fact, the Mishnah in Chav Ches Amid Aleph started the discussion. The Mishnah taking us back to the beginning of yesterday's daf, said, "Maybe get v'nichuzakin acholev, you deliver get, and even under the circumstances where he was either sick or he was, old or sick." So the Mishnah says, under those circumstances, still hu becheskas chayim hu, the person's still under a presumptive state of being alive, and the Mishnah says that that's a general assumption moving forward, that you assume people are alive. And the second Mishnah of yesterday's daf, the one we saw on the back end of yesterday, said even if the person's in somewhat of a precarious situation. So the Mishnah gave three scenarios where a person's in a precarious situation and still you assume that the person's alive. So for example, the three examples of the Mishnah is, let's say the city had a siege surrounding the city, or the boat was rocking but the boat didn't go down, or the you are facing a capital crime. You're just but you're in trial, but the court hasn't rendered a decision yet. In all those situations, so the assumption is that you are alive, and even though that's the last you heard of the person, that the assumption is that the person's alive. However, the Mishnah then goes on to describe these three scenarios where it's just one step further in the process. So let's say the city was not just sieged by the non-Jews, but let's say it was invaded and captured, or the boat was avdabiyam, was lost at sea, or the person actually not only was facing a trial, but was convicted of a trial. So in those circumstances, so now the assumption changes. Now what does it change to? So that the Mishnah said yesterday, it doesn't change that the person's dead, because he's not, because we don't know factually that the person's dead, but we can no longer say the person's alive. So where is he? Somewhere between being alive and dead. And the Mishnah, that was the end of the Mishnah. We saw yesterday, Nost and Nalein, Chumre Chaim v'Chumre Mesim. We're going to have to go in both directions, providing the Chumras of that he's alive and the Chumras that he's dead. And the person now, unfortunately, is in a status of limbo, unknown in terms of where he currently stands right now. Rav Yosef, after having learned the Mishnah yesterday, Rav Yosef commented on the Mishnah that when we're talking about facing a capital crime and having a verdict of guilty, and the Mishnah now saying that he has a status of somewhere between alive and dead, so Rav Yosef on that says that we're talking about a Beis Nishol of the Kochavim, meaning which court was he facing? Was he in a Jewish court or in a non-Jewish court? So Rav Yosef says that he is in a Jewish court. I'm sorry, in a non-Jewish court. That's what the Mishnah is describing, because in a non-Jewish court, so there is no appeal process, and the Gemara acknowledged yesterday, yeah, they do accept bribes, but the bribery is not done after the verdict. Bribery is only accepted before the verdict, and so therefore, Rav Yosef says that under those circumstances, so now we're going to go through a status change of being somewhere between alive and dead. However, Rav Yosef said in yesterday's daf that if we're talking about the A Jewish court has an appeal process, and we learned about the appeal process in Sanhedrin, in the sixth parak of Sanhedrin, and because there's an appeal process, so we don't assume that the person's dead. In other words, again, the person, if that's the last we've learned about the person, we're still going to assume that the person's alive due to the fact that there is an appeal process. That is what Rav Yosef commented on the mission that we learned yesterday. Tashma, we are on the bottom of Chav Ches Amud Beis. We're going to pick it up right where we left off yesterday. The Gemara's Tashma coming here, meaning the Gemara is going to take a look at a Braisa. We're going to look at a Braisa together, and we're going to see as to whether or not Rav Yosef seems to be correct or not correct. So the Braisa reads, Shama mi Beis Nishel Yisrael Shayu Omrim Ishponi Meis Ishponi Nairag. So if we heard that it was a Beis Nishel Yisrael, so it was a Jewish court, and they said that the person died, the person was executed, Yasir Sishto, so at that point in time, so then you can marry off his wife, meaning that's enough information to know that the husband is actually dead and the wife can remarry. However, Mikum Natri Sinshov de Kochavim, Ishpani Meis, Ishpani Narag, however, if we hear from a an executioner, a non-Jewish executioner, that so-and-so died, so-and-so was executed, so then you're not allowed to marry off his wife, meaning that's not enough credible information to allow for the wife to remarry. Now, the words that were used over here in this Mishnah from Sanhedrin is you words like mace and neharag. What do those words mean? So my mace, my neharag, ilam, mace, mace, mamish, neharag, mamish, dekavetse, gabeov, dekochavim. So is the report that the person actually died? Is that the report? So the Gemara says, if that's the report, then the person's dead. And even if the one reporting is a non-Jew, but when all said and done, the person's dead. And even the non-Jew reporting it is enough to provide us information. In fact, I can't understand why the wife wouldn't be able to remarry. We know that if the non-Jew is speaking what's called Mesiach Lufi Tumo, he's speaking innocently, meaning he doesn't know that he's right now providing testimony. He's just giving matter-of-fact information under those circumstances. Goyim have, under certain circumstances, credibility. And these are the circumstances where a guy has credibility, meaning when it comes to allowance for a woman to remarry. So if the guy is providing information matter-of-factly, Mesiach Lufi Tumo, so under those circumstances, he's believed. So the Gemara says, so let's think about it. If what the guy is providing is the information of, yeah, he was killed. Yeah, I saw him killed. I saw him executed. So we're going to believe him. He said it matter-of-factly. So, and the Braisa says we're not going to believe him. So it must be the Braisa is dealing with a somewhat different circumstance. The Gemara goes on to explain. Elav meis yotze lamos. Nerag yotze lehareg. So it must be that meis and nerag doesn't mean that they actually died. It means they were on their way to being killed, to being executed. Now, viketani. So that must be the case in the Braisa. Now, assuming that that's true, and that's an assumption, but assuming that's true, now we go back to the Braisa and let's consider. That if it's a Beis Din Yisrael Yisrael, so then you're allowed to marry the widow. The widow's allowed to marry. So now the Gemara says, now wait one second. According to you, Rav Yosef, what do we learn? We learn that in the Jewish court, there's an appeal process. And because of the appeal process, so therefore, just because the person was convicted of a capital crime, and even though he's going to be taken out to be executed, but you, Rav Yosef, taught us that that appeal process leaves us now assuming, or we can't assume that the person's going to be actually killed because there's such an appeal process. And meanwhile, in this Braisa, based on an assumption, which obviously you know is going to change, but based on an assumption that we just made in the Braisa is teaching us that you can marry, even though all we know is that he was being taken out to being executed. So this is a question on Rav Yosef. So the Gemara says, okay. So what we're going to do is change our assumption. Death meaning the report is he actually died. Or he was actually executed. Now, what was our problem with that? Our problem with that is that then we wondered, the guy was also providing the information, he was saying it matter-of-factly, and as a result of that, we should believe him, and the Braisa says, we don't. So why not? So the Gemara says, and here's the Gemara just simply asking the question. I thought we believe Goyim when they're saying things Mesiach Lufi Tumo. So the Gemara says it depends. If they're saying something matter-of-factly and it doesn't reflect upon them, meaning they're just simply stating objective facts, they have no shaykhus to it, they have no relevance to it, they're not biased on these issues, so then of course you believe them. However, over here, we're talking about their reporting about their court system. So it is shaykh to them. they are, as Rashi says, look at the words of Rashi, shaykhi bay, ki hacha shemit pa'arim shahargu bedin. Right, they're glorifying themselves on it. Meaning, look at our court system. Look how good our court system is. Right, we had this Jew. He was in the court system. He did something heinous, and our court system, they take care of it. So they're glorifying themselves with it. So at that point in time, they want to basically make it out like they're tough. It's something that they have shaychus to, and as a result of that, it no longer can fall under the category of Mesiach Lufi Tumo. And at that point in time, they're biased, and there's a good chance that they're not telling the truth. So Avida L'Shaker. So they're going to say that the person was killed, even though the truth of the matter is they it may not even be true. Okay. Ikedami. So we're going to do the whole thing again, meaning the same discussion that we just had at the tail end of yesterday's daf, the beginning of today's daf, meaning Rav Yosef's comment on the Mishnah. We're going to do this all again, but in a slightly different version. Ikedami. I'm Rav Yosef lo shanu la bebeisin shalav de kochavim. Aval bebeisin shal yisoh kevin denafik le dina le migdalei kat le le. So here now, in this Ikedami, Rav Yosef is going to make his distinction, but in the other direction. Our Mishnah said, Yodse le harek, that once you know, you learn about the person being executed. So the Mishnah says he no longer could be in a presumed state of being alive, although he also can be in a no longer in a presumed state of being dead. He's somewhere in the middle. That's only based in Shalav de Kochavim. However, based in Shal Yisrael, once he's being taken out to be executed, he will be executed. Now, this second version of Rav Yosef is a little bit difficult to understand because there is an appeal process, meaning that's a truism. It's a fact. We do have an appeal process. So if we have an appeal process, we had a fine time understanding the first version of Rav Yosef. The second version of Rav Yosef is a little tricky. Take a look at the top Tosfos on the Amud where he's also by this. Af agav de amr b'sanhedrin shaya echad rochev al sus v'sojim v'sud darim b'yado matzol tzchus haya hala meni v'sujim Besudrin, basically Tosfos is describing the appeal process. It's when we go through Sanhedrin. We'll go through the horses, the flag waving. Okay, it's based on a system where you know they didn't have email, so or texting, or you know, telephone. So okay, so but anyway, the point being is that there was an appeal process. So if that's true, so then why do we assume that the person was executed? So Tosfos answers this all very simply: Mikomakom lo shchiach. There is a process, there's a system, but at the same time, we have to look at how many times the appeal was actually used. And, according to the second version of Yosef, we're going to assume, not that often. Rarely used. Meaning so that in the statistical chance of, here's the last thing I heard. He faced a capital crime in a Jewish court, he was convicted, they were taken out to be executed, and that's all I know. Now, based on that information, what probably happened? So even though there is an appeal process, but what probably happened is that they didn't exercise the appeal process. It was rarely used. It was employed. It was there. It's part of the system, but practically speaking, hardly ever used. And that's why Rav Yosef says, now the strongest likelihood is that that person died. In fact, it's more than just a strong likelihood. We can now base it on, you want to call it a rov, you want to call it a chazaka. You know, we can fit in the correct terminology, but the person's dead. We can assume the person is dead. Okay, Amalei Abai, based in Shaisal Nami. Sorry, okay. Yeah. So Amalei Abai. So now in the Sikha Damri, we're going to do all this again. We're going to quote the Mishnayos and the Brises that we quoted previously, and again, they're all going to prove or disprove this point now of Yosef. Amalei Abai, based in Shaisal Nami, Efsher Dechazal Eschusa. So, sometimes they're going to find some sort of reason to find an acquittal, meaning they're going to go through the appeal process. So his answer is, yeah, they do. You're right. They do find reasons to try to find to acquit, but all those reasons are exhausted during the court proceeding. Once based and arrived at a conclusion, you're really not going to find any more arguments to make. So basically, after the verdict has come out, again, like Tosfos says, but the Gemara is saying it, it's pretty much not going to happen that we're going to find a new argument to look for an acquittal. So now the Gemara says, let's use this as a proof. Like we learned yesterday, the guy was convicted. He successfully ran away from the court. So two witnesses now are coming and testifying. This man was convicted of a capital crime in a Jewish court, and they gave all the correct information. So based on that, this man is now going to be convicted once again and executed. So the Gemara says, and there we're not worried about an appeal process. Oh, you see that we're not worried about an appeal process. So the Gemara's answer is Dilma Borech Shani. It could be a good proof, but it's not absolute because, like we said yesterday, look at the context. He's running away from the court. So if he's running away from the court, clearly they didn't use an appeal process. If they used an appeal process, he wouldn't be running away. Tashmash, Mamina, I'm sorry. Shama bebeisin shayisor shayomim mishponi meis mishponi nera gesir sishto mikum natrisin shel of the kochavim mishponi meis mishponi nera al yasir sishto. We're quoting this Bryson once again, where once again the Bryson is contrasting hearing it from a Jew Jew or hearing it from a non-Jew. So hearing it from a Jew, then you can believe it. Hearing it from a non-Jew, you can't believe it. Now again, my mace, my naharag. We're going to go through the same discussion. What do the words mace and naharag mean? Elam, mace, mamash, and naharag, mamash, and kavaseh, gabayov, de kochavim, amay, ali, siros, ishtar, kamelan, komeseh, lefito, mahemun, mehemnele. So the Gemara says, if we're talking about where the report is that he actually died, so then meseh, lefito, matter of fact information coming from a non-Jew is believed so that a woman can remarry. So elalav, mace, yotze, lamash. So once again, the Gemara's argument is that it means that he's being taken out to be killed. And then it says that if you hear that regarding a Jewish court, so then the wife can remarry. This is supportive of the Ika D'Amr of Rav Yosef, because that's exactly what Rav Yosef is saying. So the Gemara says it's not such a good raya la'olam meis mamish v'nerag mamish. So the Gemara says it could be that here the report is that he actually died. So the Gemara says, if you're right, so then why aren't we believing the non-Jew? So to that, the Gemara says once again, when a matter of fact reporting by a non-Jew going to be credible? That's only when they have no bias and they have no self-interest. But if they have a self-interest in this matter, if it's something that they're using to glorify themselves with, like Rashi described earlier, so then you have to believe, then you can't believe them, and therefore their credibility of Mesiach Lifi Tumo is stripped away from them. Okay, Adkan. All right, so that takes us from the end of yesterday's Mishnah, and now we are in the Mishnah Chavtes Amud Aleph, new Mishnah of the day, new topic of the day, a shliach appointing another shliach. Okay, you knew it was coming. This is the parak, the third parak of Gittin, is the parak of shlichus, of sending a messenger. So now it's really the next step along the way, and that is sending a messenger, and then him passing the baton, in this case not the baton, but the get over to another shliach, and allowing him to complete the job. Now, you have two mishnahs. You have this mishnah on the Amud Aleph of today's daf, and you have the second mishnah, which God willing, we'll see later on this morning, they stand the Amud Beis, and the contrast between these two mishnahs are, this mishnah over here is talking about giving a get within Eretz Yisrael. The Mishnah coming up on the Amud Beis is talking about giving a get from outside of Eretz Yisrael. And at this point in time, the Masechta, we all know the difference. Let's spell it out. If you're giving a get within Eretz Yisrael, you don't have to say b'fanenechtam, which becomes the key word, the code words, which basically allow the get to work. It provides the authentication of the get, and failure to say it will render the get puzzle. If you're delivering a get from outside of Eretz Yisrael, right, from inside you don't have to say it, from outside of Eretz Yisrael you do have to say it. And failure to say it is going to render the get puzzle. So now, passing the baton along. If you're delivering the get within Eretz Yisrael, it's much easier because you don't have to say the words b'fanenechta. And let's consider, meaning a shlich passes it to a second shlich. Can the second shlich legitimately say b'fanenechta? Of course not. B'fanenechta means it was written in front of me, and b'fanenechta means it was signed in front of me. So if you're delivering the get in Eretz Yisrael, you don't have this whole issue. So that makes it much easier. But when you're delivering a get from outside of Eretz Yisrael and you need to say the words b'fanenechta, you can't send the second shliach with the get and tell him, hey, say these words. They're not true for him. So obviously now there's going to be a big difference in the passing of the get from one shliach to another, whether you do or do not need to say b'fanenechta, and that's why we have two mishnayos. The Mishnah on the Amud Aleph and the Mishnah on the Amud Beis, and they're both now going to be discussing this issue with or without b'fanenechtam. First we discuss without.
But didn't we learn that there is also a time contingent in the previous Mishnahs?
No, that's only if you lose the get. No, here we're not losing the get. The get's in hand. It's just being passed from one to another. Maybe get Eretz Yisrael v'chala. So let's say you're delivering get within Eretz Yisrael. Now you were assigned the mission, the task of delivering the get from the husband to the wife. However, en route, he got sick. So he got sick, so he sent somebody else to finish the job. So I may be get back to yourself, v'chala harizim ashachal b'yan achir. So the Mishnah says, wonderful. So, I mean, not wonderful that you're sick, wonderful that you'll pass the get along to somebody else, and that somebody else then will deliver the get to the wife. V'im amar la, however, let's say the husband said the following to the shliach, toli heimena chefetz ploni. The husband says to the wife, look, I'm sorry, the husband says to the shliach, look, I want to divorce her, but she is holding something of mine that's of value. And what I want you to do, basically, is I want you to make an exchange. I want you to deliver the get, but only with the understanding and circumstance that you get back the following from my wife, which will become my ex-wife, when you deliver the get. Now, under these circumstances, clearly, he's not just appointing the shliach to deliver the get. He's appointing him because he entrusts him to hold on to that item that he's going to end up taking back from his wife. So now it becomes a little bit more complicated because it's not just delivery of a get, it's also, I want you specifically because I want you to be the custodian of the item from when you take it from my wife. So totally, I'm in a chavetz pony. Lo yishachana biyadacher she'ein ritzona she'epik don biyadacher. So here now, this shliach can't point a second shliach because it is clearly not the intent of the husband that the second shliach should be the one who's going to be the trustee, the custodian of the item that's being taken away from the wife. Now, Amar Rav Kahana Chalatanan. So Rav Kahana makes the simple observation of our Mishnah, and that is, when can a shliach appoint another shliach? When the first shliach gets sick. Now, it's a simple observation of the Mishnah, and it's one that we all could have made, and the Mishnah obviously is describing that scenario. Tanan. So Pshita, Chalakatani, which is exactly what the Gemara says. That's an obvious point. Now, maybe the truth of the matter is that a shliach can appoint another shliach even if there's no illness involved. If, let's say, the first shliach says, you know what? I know I agreed. I know I said I'm going to deliver the get, but you know what? I'm not interested right now. So under those circumstances, maybe he could still appoint another shliach. Now, when you look at our Mishnah says, no, you can only do that if you're sick, if you have a legitimate reason why you want to appoint a second shliach. But just because you feel like it, you're going to appoint a second shliach, our Mishnah doesn't seem to agree to that. And you could have made the argument that our Mishnah is just giving a case study, which is one which is most usual. But it's not coming to exclude a scenario in which, hey, I don't feel like being the shliach, therefore I'll appoint somebody else. Kamash Malan. So the Gemara says that's what Rav Kahana is coming to teach us. That the example of our Mishnah is specific. We're looking specifically for a scenario in which the first shliach is chola. He's sick, and therefore that's why he can't do it. He must have a legitimate reason, and then and only then can he appoint a second shliach. Now, hechidam idam alei holech afagav delo chola nami. V'idam alei at holech afilu chola nami lo. So the Gemara says, let's think about our Mishnah a little bit more carefully. What were the instructions of the husband? If the instructions were deliver, so isn't the whole mission delivery? What difference does it make whether he's sick or not sick? And if the mission, if the instructions of the husband was at holech, okay, I know, in Hebrew we would call it ata, but, okay, this is it's, you know, quasi-Aramaic. So if he said to him, and I want you to go, so then, obviously, then the mission statement of him being assigned to shliach, it's he who has to go to the exclusion of anyone else. Now, the E Rashbag, and if it's Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, now it's fair at this point to ask, who's Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel? Meaning we know who he is, but who is he in this context? We haven't seen his name being uttered yet. Stay tuned. We're going to be introduced to him in just a moment. Afilu chala namilo. According to Rabbi Shimon ben Gamliel, a shlich cannot appoint a second shlich under any circumstance. Even illness does not allow a first shlich to appoint a second shlich. Now, Detanya, the Gemara says, now let's take a look at the Braisa where all this information is stored. If the husband's instructions were holech, shliach can appoint another shliach because the mission over there is very simple. Simply deliver. deliver the get. If the instructions were, I want you to be Meshaleach, so then the instructions are, I want you to the exclusion of anybody else. Rashba gomer, ben kach ben kach, ein hashliach ose shliach. And Rashba Shimon Gamliel says that under all circumstances, the shliach cannot appoint another shliach. There is a de facto implicit understanding that when I'm handing you the get to deliver, it's because I want you to deliver. So Ibai say maholech v'hu dechala. So the Gemara is going to give a number of suggestions in terms of how to understand the Mishnah or the Braisa. So number one, says the Gemara, is that it could be the instructions were holech and v'hu dechala. But only under the circumstances where you're sick can you then hand it off to somebody else. Or you could say that the instructions were atah holech, but that's only under the assumption that you're fine. However, if you're sick, then I'm totally understanding of the idea that you're not going to go and somebody else will go. Or you could say that the author of our Mishnah is really Rishim Gamliel, the Chalashani. And although Rashbag says under all circumstances it needs to be the Shliach and it cannot be anybody else, however, that's only if the person's healthy. Once the person's sick, then there's an implicit understanding that the husband would want the get to be delivered. And if the shliach can't make it because he's sick, so then, of course, pass it along to another shliach. So you could say that our mission is going like the Tanakama. You could say it's going like the Rashbag, and just being ill is a different scenario. Tanan. Let's take a look at our Mishnah. Maybe get buried yourself a chalarizim shachal biyat acher urim minhu. The Gemara restates our Mishnah, and now the Gemara is going to be bothered because we're going to look at our Mishnah, and we're going to look at it in light of another Mishnah, which is Amar l'shnayim tenu get li'ishti. If a man says to two, I want you to deliver this get to my wife. Now, the get is, at this point in time, wasn't even written. The instructions over here not only include deliver the get to my wife, but write it and deliver it. So Amar l'shnayim tenu get li'ishti. O l'shlosha kitzvu get v'tenu li'ishti. Or he turns to three and he says, I want you to write and to deliver the get to my wife. The difference between two and three, we're going to discuss later in the Masechta. So hare elu yichtivu v'yitnu. So these people are going to write and these people are going to deliver. Okay, now, what did we learn in our Mishnah? A shliach can appoint another shliach. Okay, and again, with the discussion of maybe it's limited to when he's sick, maybe it's not limited when he's sick, but at least there's a possibility, at least our Mishnah entertains the idea that a shliach can appoint another shliach. And meanwhile, later...
So you're ahead.
So, and later the Mishnah is going to tell us that if the instruction is, I want you to write and to deliver the get, it's these and only these people that can write and deliver the get, and they can't appoint another shliach. So, Lisha Hare Elu Yichtuvu V'yidnu, Inu, Ava Shliach Lo. They must do it, they can't appoint another shliach to do that. What's the difference between the two cases? Answers the Gemara, two answers. So over there, there's a mitigating circumstance, and that is the bizayon of the Baal. Bizayon of the Baal, what does that mean? So Rashi says, Sha'Allah lichtov es haget, because he's supposed to write the get. Now, I know we've gone over this point a number of times, and it's interesting. It's really something which hopefully I will get my head wrapped around, and that is the Torah's instruction is because of law. He writes. Remember just a short couple of days ago, we had a Rashi that says that fundamentally, who's the pasuk going on? Is it going on the husband, or is it going on the sofer? So if you remember, a couple of days ago, I think it's more than a couple. So Tosos was making the argument, yes, it was more than a couple. It goes back to Chav Beis Amud Beis. So Tosfos makes the argument that fundamentally the instruction in the Torah of the custom of law is not going on the husband, but it's rather going on the sofer. The sofer is the one who is fundamentally charged with the instruction. What the husband has to do is he has to commission the writing. But fundamentally the mitzvah is on the sofer. Here, Rashi, I guess maybe you could suggest that Rashi's arguing on that point, but Rashi writes that really the instruction of the writing of the get, I should say rather, so let's say it's simpler. The writing of the get needs to be done by the husband. Okay? However, he can't, for whatever reason, he's not capable of writing the get. So what does he do? He asks other people to do it. So now, basically, does he want this information broadcast to others? That he's right now in a position where he needs to write to get. He wants to write again. He needs to write again, but he doesn't know how. Okay, so Abayi says, under those circumstances, now these two who were commissioned to write and deliver the get, so they should not be sub-commissioning anybody else, because that's only broadcasting to everybody. The husband doesn't know what he's doing. He doesn't know how to write a get. So it's embarrassing. That's why over there, they can't subcontract. Over here, the get's already written. So now what? It's just passing the get along to somebody else, so there's no embarrassment. That's why it would be fine. That's the bias discrepancy between there and here. And I'm sorry, my mishum b'zayin the baal ha'chabal lo kapin. Over here, there's no akpada. Rav amar mishum demili ninu. Rav says there's a much more fundamental issue, and that is the following. Let's take a look at what is being instructed. Over here, the get was already written. So what is the shliach now doing? He's physically handing the get over from him to another shliach. That is, there's a physical object in hand. And now it's just passing the baton along. Over there, later in the Masechta, we're talking about instructions. You can't subcontract instructions. Mili, let's see the words of the Gemara. Rav Amar Mishum Demili Ninu. O Mili Lo Mimsterim. And Milim and words themselves, instructions themselves cannot be passed over. Let's take a look at Rashi. Rashi writes, Rav Amar. The only thing he gave over to the two or to the three were only words. The Ein Bedvarim Koach Lios Chozrim V'Nimsarim La'acher. And now, what do you want to do? You want to pass those words over to somebody else. There's nothing tangible. You're not passing anything over. All you're doing is just, you can't pass instructions along to somebody else. Aval get, the isbe mashasha. But when you're talking about a get, the get is a physical item. It's a document. It's a baton. So now you want to pass it along. There's no problem whatsoever. Chozer v'nimser. So that's what you can do. You can pass it along. Okay, so Adkan, so we have now two explanations of what's the difference between our Mishnah and the Mishnah later in the Masechta. Our Mishnah says that a shliach can make another shliach. The Mishnah later on says there's no way that the two or the three that were asked to write and deliver the get can pass it along. Abai says the difference is bizayon. There it's an issue of bizayon. Here it's not. Rava says, no, it's more fundamental. There, we're talking about words and instructions. Words and instructions cannot be passed along to somebody else. Here, we're talking about where the get was already written. A physical, tangible get can be passed along from one to the other. Gemara says, "My Beinai, what's the difference between these two answers?" So, Iga Beinai Shlech Matano v'Plukta Derav Shmuel. So, the Gemara says, "I'll tell you the difference, and that is where it's a Shlech Matana. Shlech Matana." Rashi says, "We're talking about that the Balabai says to two witnesses, I want you to write a Shtar Matana to so and so." And in other words, so over here, it's the instructions to write, but not a get, but a Shtar Matana. Who plugged the Rav Shmuel? Rav Amar Matana in a Kiget Shmuel Amar Matana Harei he Kiget. And the question now of whether or not this instruction can be subcontracted. So look at Rashi. Rashi explains the difference between the two. Sha'amar Balabais Labez Edim Kisri Shar Matana Laploni. Itam and they get Mishum Bizayin Hu Hachalek Alameim Rashi Sharei Ein Alav Lakosvo. So the Gemara says, look. If the issue is an issue of Bizayon, no Bizayon over here by the Matana, why not? Because it is not for the it's not the primary responsibility of the Baal HaMatana to write a document. Rashi quotes the Mishnah, Baba Basra, I feel like we just did this Mishnah together. HaMekabel Nosein Es HaSchar. It is the recipient of the Matana, it's his responsibility to commission the writing up of a contract stating that the property was gifted to him. So the recipient is the one who is commissioned to write up the document, much like we talked about the lender and borrower recently. And we said that it's the borrower's responsibility to write up the documentation. So too, it's the recipient of a gift. It's his responsibility to write up the documentation. So there's no bizayon, because it's not the giver's responsibility to write it up. So therefore, according to Abaye, the people who were charged with the instruction of writing up the Shtar Matana can have no problem subcontracting that job. But according to Rava, where the distinction is much more fundamental, that if it's just passing along instruction, one cannot pass instruction to somebody else, so then it doesn't matter if it's a get, doesn't matter if it's a shtar matana, whatever it is, if it's just instruction, mile lo mimsere. Okay. Continuing now in the Gemara, V'yamamar lo toli he menachef etz ploni. Amr Yish Lakish kan shana Rebbe. When it came to this Mishnah, so Rebbe got to this Mishnah, and Rebbe, when he was teaching this Mishnah, so he would teach us the following. Ein ashov rashai lashil, vein asocher rashai laskir. So sub-renting, sub-leasing. So what is our Mishnah basically telling us? Our Mishnah is telling us that if you see that there's a hakpat on the part of the husband says, I want you to go. And the reason why I want you to go is because you're going to be taking something from my wife, and so therefore, I'm going to hold you responsible, you, of course, to the exclusion of everyone else. I like you. I trust you. And so it can only be you who's going to be delivering the get, because you're going to end up being the custodian of my item. So when Rebbe taught this Mishnah, he says, oh, you know what we learned from this Mishnah? That if you were rented a home, or anything, and you are now entrusted to take care of it, you can't sublease it. Because the owner is basically saying, I like you, I trust you. I'll also take your money, but okay, that's neither here nor there. But in other words, I trust you. In other words, you can't sublease it because I trust you. I don't trust anybody, you to the exclusion of anybody else. And that's true regarding lending, it's true regarding renting. There's an implicit understanding in the lease, in the rental, in the lending, that it's you to the exclusion of everybody else. So I'm a Rav Yochanan. So Rav Yochanan says, look, all this is well and good, but it's kind of intuitive. Everyone understands this. Now, obviously, if you get permission to sublease, okay, then we can have a discussion. But without that permission, it's kind of understood. So Ella Zimnan Digita Nami Lohavi. Okay. The Gemara says, Rav Yochanan says, that's not a chiddush. That's obvious. We all know that. I'll tell you where the chiddush lies, and that is in the following. What would be the case where, let's say, the husband says to the shliach, I want you to deliver the get, and I want you in exchange for the get, I want you to take back this item. Sometimes, if that exchange is not done correctly, the get wouldn't be good. Because basically what the husband is doing is throwing a tanai into the get. The Gemara says, now we have a chiddush. So, zimnin degita nami lo havi, denasi kimishar malo, altegashir lo bebayis, vigirsha ba'aliyah. Let's say the husband has various hakpadas. Okay, look, he's a little bit crazy, but crazy. We're not saying crazy. We're saying that okay, there's certain things that really really bother him for whatever reason, but it's a tanai. In other words, it was one of the stipulations of the giving of the get. So he wants the get to be delivered on the first floor, not on the second floor, for whatever reason. Who cares? Okay, obviously that probably has to do with the deterioration of the marriage, but whatever. So he says, I only want you to get a divorce on the first floor, not on the second floor. He says, when you divorce her, only do it with the right hand, not with the left hand, and then lo and behold, he violates the tanai. So kuli ama echad nafka la pe v'yavile chefetz v'hadr shak lemine gita. So the Gemara says, look, in a scenario where he meets her, first the chayfitz is transferred, then the get is delivered. So then the Gemara says, we're all of the opinion that good. That's exactly what the husband wanted, and the get is going to be a get malia. Ki pligi hechad amale, but let's say the husband's instructions to the shliach goes as follows. Shkomina chefetz. The first thing I want you to do is I want you to take the chefetz. Meaning, basically, it's not the best way to express it, but it's a holdup. Okay? You're right. The first thing you're going to do is you're going to take the chefetz. V'hadu avlagita. And then afterwards, then you give her the get. V'azal ihu. Now, he goes. V'yavlagita. And he felt comfortable. He felt like this was not going to be an issue. He gave her the get. And then afterwards, he took the chefetz from her. Now, Rabbi Yochanan posobo the kosher came b'shlucho. So Rabbi Yochanan says that under these circumstances, it's no good. Let's take a look at that top Rashi on Chavtes Amud Beis. Rashi writes, so the azal eil v'yayv legita b'resha dechi amar leishko chavetz b'resha kapit iu shaya b'dato la'akev haget. Clearly, what the husband's interest over here was is that he basically wanted leverage. He wanted to get his leverage. So im lo titein lo achefetz lo ladoso bi'iguna ashititein. Basically, we're not moving forward until she gives me the item. So hilka chaget tala b'chefetz b'davar zeh. V'zeh im shina. Now, what if the shliach deviates from the instructions? Now, say kamisha amalo, I'll take a shanela b'bayis v'gersha b'aliyah. So then, that is basically going against the tanai. It's not implicit, according to Rav Yochanan. It's an explicit tanai that the husband makes, and again, he's makpid, and he could make tanayim. So it's an explicit tanai, and it's the shliach now violating the tanai. And so it's like when the husband says, "I want you to divorce on the first floor," and they get divorced on the second floor. Hilka from Rav Yochanan posel bo b'shliach rishon. And so Rav Yochanan says, for the first shliach, it's no good. V'kol shekein b'shlucho. Now, if the shliach appoints a second shliach, so for sure it's not going to be good. V'hainu dekamar zimnin dekita nam elohave. Hilka tana b'masisan lo yishachan b'yad acher. Shema kishim zarishon shliach usosheni lo yimsa lo dvar. And now can easily imagine that although the husband made this communication clear to shliach number one, when shliach number one appoints shliach number two, he didn't make this communication clear that first the object, then the get, and then Hasheni lo yidaktik behem v'yehi mishana. And then what's going to happen now is that the second shliach is going to be deviating from the instructions. Umifsa gita. And obviously that will be disqualification of the get. Reish Lakish machshir. Now we can go back to the Gemara, and the Gemara says, according to Reish Lakish, it's fine. B'shluch v'kosher kein bo. Reish Lakish is machshir the second shliach, and Reish Lakish is also going to be machshir the first shliach as well. Even though the husband says, first take the item and then give the get, as long as there was an exchange, so Reish Lakish says, look, mission, objective accomplished. Meaning the shliach is basically supposed to get the chefetz out of her. It wasn't exactly the order as the husband wanted, but Reish Lakish says, "But look, let's look at the objective. Let's look at what happened. Objective: get the object out of her. What happened? The object was gotten out of her. So Reish Lakish says it was not a violation of the husband's instructions.
Tonight to him,
it was Reish Lakish will basically say that tonight was to get the item, and the item was gotten." And Reish Lakish doesn't agree with his brother-in-law that it has to be specifically in the order the husband laid out. Okay.
If you look at it from a tonight perspective, it's very important the sequence that you follow.
Okay, good. You're like Rav Yochanan. That's Rav Yochanan's position. And the Rambam. Okay, let's just quickly start the next Mishnah. So now, as I mentioned earlier this morning, this is the second half of today's daf. I mean, both literally and figuratively as well. Meaning, in the first half of today's daf, we learned about delivering a get within Eretz Yisrael, so a shliach would have no problem subcontracting another shliach because you don't have to say b'fanenechta. But now, in this Mishnah, we're dealing with the same issue, but it is complicated by the variable that the first shliach has to say b'fanenechtam. So how can he subcontract a second shliach? The second shliach wasn't there for the writing and the signing of the get. There is no way that he can legitimately say b'fanenechtam. So what is he going to do? What's the first shliach going to do? So the Mishnah says, here's the solution. Hamevi get me medina zayam v'chala osa shliach bebezdin. So what he can do is he can make that appointment of the second shliach by doing so in Bezdin. So now he could say in Bezdin. Bezdin now is hearing that, registering that, and now going to be certifying the document. And now as far as the shliach acharon, which right now we'll translate as the second shliach, but, you know, shliach acharon could mean the third, the fourth, in other words, but once it's now certified and based in, so he can deliver the get, the only thing he has to articulate is that I am a shliach based in. Because if he doesn't articulate that, so then he would have to say, b'fanenechtam, and he can't, and that obviously produces a problem. Just a little bit of Gemara, and we'll stop for today. Amalei Rabbanan, Lavi Mebreid Rabbi Abba, Ma Ba Minei Me Rabbi Abba, Shliach to Shliach, Ma She Shliach Olo. Now, where Shliach can make a second Shliach. We learned that in the first half of today's daf, and the second half of today's daf. Is there a limit, or is that it? I just asked the same question twice. Is there a limit or no? In other words, can this appointment of shliach continue? So he says, well, like, let's look at our Mishnah. Look at the wording of the Mishnah. Our Mishnah says shliach achron. So achron just simply means last man in the fireman's ladder. Meaning it was passed from one to another to another to another. As long as the final shliach says the words that I'm a shliach based in, so it sounds like you can continue passing it along. So what I'm okay, good. I'm not asking that. My question is that after the second shliach, do we still have to keep doing this in based in? Ani. He says that's also not a question. The last one has to say I'm a shliach based in. So Rav Nachman Yitzchak Masni Hachi. Amalei Rabban Laavi Mebreid Rabbi Abba Ba Minei Me Rabbi Abba Shlech to Shlech Himashi Shlech Bebeisin O Shlo Bebeisin. When you get to Shlech number 3, number 4, number 5, does it have to be done in Beisin? Amalei Uvite Bai Lachu Himashi Shlech Baama. He says, wait one second, slow down. Why don't you even ask the question about appointing a third and a fourth Shlech? So Amalei Halo Mi Bai Landini and a Shlech Acheron Michal De Shlech Mashi Shlech. So he says, no, I already know the answer to that because of the language of the Mishnah, where the Mishnah says Shlech. I'm just wondering now, when you get to shliach numbers 3, 4, and 5, and etc., does it have to be done based in? Amelu and amelu ti bailechu diktani ella omer shliach based in ani. So he has to say that I'm a shliach based in. So it sounds like everyone has to be appointed in a, has to be commissioned in an actual based in. Okay, I'll stop over here. Tomorrow we'll pick it up from Amar Rabbah.